भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता एज इट इज उन माय गुरुविल Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 1, Text 39, and I may chant some more also. Kulakshaye Parnashyanti
Kulakshaye Parnashyanti
Kuladharma Sanatana
Kuladharma
Parame Nashte Kulam Krishnam
Parame Nashte Kulam Krishnam
Adharmo Bhivavatyuta
Adharmo Bhivavatyuta.
With the destruction of the dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. In the system of the Varnashram institution, there are many principles of religious traditions to help members of the family grow properly and attain spiritual values. The elder members are responsible for such purifying processes in the family, beginning from birth to death. But on the death of the elder members, such family traditions of purification may stop, and the remaining younger family members may develop irreligious habits and thereby lose their chance for spiritual salvation. Therefore, for no purpose should the elder members of the family be slain.
I am continuing a series. This verse I'm speaking on today because I've spoken from verse 1 through to 38, and I'm continuing in this way. You want to turn that fan on? Or they come in two in a row. Is it just for me, for my voice, it's bad to sit under the fan, but Now, the word kula used here has been translated by Srila Prabhupada both as family and as dynasty. So, as in most languages above the most basic level, there are various words have various synonyms or which have often somewhat different meanings. Can everyone hear? Srikar and Hari, do you have another mic?
Yes.
I suggest those who require Tamil translation come and sit at the front. You want to bring a chair for her? Anyone else? You have to ask in Tamil. Everyone else knows English, is it? Yeah, so the word dynasty has a broader meaning than that of family. In the modern age, the word family has come to mean something very different to what it used to be conceptualized. Just like the word friend is undergoing a transformation. In days before people traveled very much, friend meant someone you knew very intimately, who you would have regular intercourse with. And then in the modern age, in city life, friend often means someone who you know and you say hello to and smile at sometimes. And now friend is coming to mean someone on Facebook. It probably comes to mean someone who you don't shoot dead when you first see them. So in the same way, with the progress of Kali Yuga, the concept of family is changing. Family previously meant a very big body. The family lunch might consist of 70 or 80 people. But gradually, family is coming to mean some kind of economic unit that lives together for convenience and a little shared grand sense gratification. And often the family members, they really don't have much in common with each other. Everyone is economically independent, so people don't need each other. And we'll find in the Western countries especially that in certain families, every member will have their own car, and they have their own room with their own TV, and everyone just arranges their, either they eat outside or they just take something out of the freezer, and they eat whenever they want, whatever they want, and they don't all sit together at a meal. So the economic and emotional and physical support that was the basis of a family is no longer there. So that we find that families are very flexible. Sometimes one husband, sometimes another husband. And in English that phrase is their single parent family. Which usually means that the parents are divorced and the woman is living with her children. So how there can be a single parent family when both parents are alive is not possible in the true meaning of the word family. Now here Arjuna speaks of Kula Dharma Sanagana, the eternal family traditions. So dharma is usually considered as a singular term, but here it refers to the various usages, social usages which take place within the family. So the Vedic understanding of family is that it is a unit for executing dharma. Dharma is in the pristine sense, which means in the original and unsullied, unchanged sense, is executed within the society that practices Varnashram Dharma. So each family would have its particular status within Varnashram Dharma, as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. And they all have their role to play. They all had to contribute to society in a particular way. And they would take pride in performing their duties properly. So even in the potter's family, for instance, although they're not very high socially, they're quite low, just the duty of making well-made pots for the use of the whole society, they realize, well, that's an important function. That's required to help all of society function properly. So in each generation, they would teach the boys how to make pots that are well serviceable. So in this way, all the various families had something to contribute, and all are required in society. If everyone is within Brahmanas, there may be cooks, or archakas, or those who are teachers, spiritual guides and gurus, there are various tasks which various Brahmanas undertake. So within the family of cooks, then the boys from a young age would be trained how to cook. So that's an important service. And although the Brahmanas are generally considered more important than the Shudras, if everyone was a cook, then who would make the pots to bring the water in for cooking? So everyone is required in human society, everyone has their contribution. The Brahmana caste is considered more elevated than that of the lower castes, because theoretically anyone can do manual work, but the intelligent work, Not everyone can do that. And the purity that is required to be a spiritual guide or an archaka, not everyone has that. The archaka's job might seem fairly easy compared to that of a laborer, but very few laborers could do the job of an archaka. Because to be with the deity all day, every day, requires sattva-guna, and to learn how to chant the mantras properly requires also sattva-guna. Now it may seem that, well, what's Brahmanas are also cooks, so what's so special about being a cook? In every caste, at least the women cook, everyone has to cook. But those who are going to cook for the deity, they should be Brahmanas. It means that ideally they should be trained in the spiritual knowledge of understanding who they are cooking for, the Supreme Personality of God. Unfortunately, within the Brahmana community, the teaching of the spiritual understanding that comes with systematic teaching is now largely lost, so that the Brahmanas are largely Brahmanas in name only. Kalau Shudra Sambhava, in Kali Yoga, all are born as Shudras. Actually, in every age, everyone is born as Shudras. Jalmana Jayate Shudra, at birth, even the highest class Brahmin son is equivalent to a Shudra. Shudra means one without developed knowledge, intelligence, and discrimination. Knowledge, intelligence, and discrimination. Shochati iti Shudra, one who is inclined to lament, is a Shudra. So we see that a child is similar to an animal in as much as it's completely on the platform of what can I get to stick in my mouth? Completely on the sensual platform. And if he doesn't get what he wants or he feels a little uncomfortable, then he screams. So samskara bhavet bija. By undergoing samskara or Vedic purificatory process, one who is born just like a Shudra becomes known as a Dvija or twice born. So here Arjuna talks about Kula Dharma Asanatana Ha, about the Vedic, the various usages within the families among which the samskaras are prominent. At every moment of the day there are various usages which are to be observed and followed. Specific samskaras, beginning with garbhadhan samskara, these are particular important usages. Now, if once within a family of Brahmanas the garbhadhan samskara is not observed before procreation, then the whole family is converted to Shudras according to Shastra. So where is the Brahman family today? Most of them have never even heard of the term garbhadhan samskara. So all these usages are very important for maintaining purity within families. Now, here it said, Kula Dharma Sanatana, the eternal usages within families, social customs and observances. But then Arjuna says, Dharma Nashtar, that this becomes spoiled or terminated. But then if it's sanatana, then how can it be spoiled or terminated? So here it's understood that the term sanatana is contextual. It's not to be understood in the completely literal sense. Because nothing in this world is sanatana. This very world itself is anityam asukham lokam. It's defined. One of its two defining characteristics is that everything here is temporary. And this world, the whole universe itself is temporary. And another defining characteristic of this material world is that it is a place of non-happiness. So when Arjuna speaks of kula dharma sanatanaha, when he speaks of the eternal family tradition, this is understood to be contextual. The idea is that, well, the family tradition has gone on for so many generations that it's unchanged over many, many generations. Just like there used to be a saying that the yogurt in our family goes back for so many generations. Yogurt, dahi.
Oh,
dahi.
Yogurt.
Not the yogurt, yogurt. Because from the same yogurt, one day, a little bit is kept, and he makes some more the next day. And this can go on for hundreds of years. Parampara. Parampara, parampara, idam yogurt. How many ladies make yogurt? You all still make yogurt at home? I just came from Dubai. No one makes it. You buy it ready-made in a plastic. And you have to be careful which brand you buy, because some of them, they put some meat products also. Anyway, that was a point of pride that you see in our family. The yogurt goes back for so many generations. And they would know the names of the family members right back to Lord Brahma.
How many
really? That in Sajjana Toshani, one magazine, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he established, he gave his family tree back from Brahma. So it was expected that people would know. And when they say, what is your gotra? It's not just the name of one rishi, but you should know everyone in between also. So those who come in the Vaishnava line, they are called Achyuta Gotra. So we should also know the names of our Purvajan, our ancestors. We should know who are the members, the prominent members of the prominent acharyas in Parampara. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has listed or given the names of the important acharyas in Parampara in his song, which begins, Krishna Hoite Chatur Loka Hoi Krishna Shiva Loka. That the four-headed Brahma became inclined toward the service of Krishna by receiving knowledge from Krishna himself. So within that song, he says, Parampara Jano Halomati. We should know well what is Parampara. So this means we should know well what is the principle of Parampara, Guru Shishya Parampara. And we should also know the names of the prominent acharyas in the Parampara. And we should also know what are their contributions. The contributions of the acharyas can be divided into two categories, extrinsic and intrinsic. So, opening temples, initiating many disciples, these giving laws for or rules that the people should follow in their daily lives, these can be considered extrinsic. And intrinsic means their contributions to the philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness. The books that they write, and the contribution to the, not just philosophical contribution, but the bhakti, the spirit of bhakti. So here, Arjuna, he speaks of the kula, he's very concerned with the dynasty. For a person like Arjuna, who was born in a respectable dynasty, There is on one side the family dharma tradition, kula dharma, and there's also the spiritual guidance he'll take. So both, he has two paramparas, family parampara and the spiritual parampara. But not everyone gets the spiritual side. Generally, guru is understood, well, it has various meanings, but it may mean a family priest. Just like, the Pandavas, in their young age, they accepted Dhaumya as their family priest. Dhaumya was a Vaishnava. They were also Vaishnavas. So Dhaumya guided them in the various family activities that they were to perform. But he guided them how to do that in a spirit of Vishnu Bhakti. So such a person is a family guru. But apart from that, one, even though the family priest may himself be a very good Vaishnava, maybe a Shakta or a Shaiva, depending on the tradition of the family. But one who makes the vital contribution to one's spiritual awakening may be a different person. We find in the case of Raghunath Das Goswami that his father and uncle Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar, they were also Vaishnavas.
That uncle is father's brother, or
uncle is father's brother. It's just uncle. And the family guru was Yadunandana Acharya, who is counted among the followers. Yadunandana Acharya himself was an exalted Vaishnava, a follower of Nityananda Prabhu, as far as I remember. But the person who is the spiritual guide, who is the important spiritual guide of Raghunath Das Goswami, is Swarup Damodar. And Nityananda Prabhu, actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is his important spiritual guide, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to directly instruct Raghunath Das. He said, you'll be under the guidance of Swarup Damodar. So, So this Kula Dharma Sanatana, the family tradition, may go on for hundreds of years, thousands of years, and there may be very little change over generations. In the modern age, to do something new and different is considered laudable. On the toothpaste packet, it always says new. Although, we wonder if it's always new. And if it's always, their advertising is new, that means what you're getting now is not really very good, because they still have to understand something better. So the idea is that, well, we're always discovering something new and we're getting better. But the Vedic understanding is that we already have the best thing, therefore we shouldn't change it. The dharma that is given to us is perfect, and therefore we should not change anything. The dharma given to us is perfect means that's perfect for us. What is observed in one family is perfect for that family. The culture and usages within one family may be different in another family. Different to those of another family. Within one caste, the customs and usages are pretty much the same in each family. There may be some small differences. Just like in one family, the yogurt may be more sour than in another family. Or they make the buttermilk a little thinner. But the basic culture is the same. And it's understood that that is perfect for our family to perform our duty within the broader society. Therefore, to change anything is considered an offense. I mean, there's a great sense of identity with a particular caste and a particular dharma. If you say, well, the yogurt in our family is the same for 700 years, that means you've been living in the same house for 700 years, or at least the same site, the house may have been rebuilt. And the same practices have continued unchanged over all the generations. In our family, our father, grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-great, they've all been serving the same deity. And we observe the festivals, in such and such a way. And all agree, already from generations the agreement is there with, for instance, the Baba. The Baba comes, say, twice a month and he performs these particular functions. There's a great sense of pride that we're in a family who for generations have been following their dharma very perfectly, and each person has the sense that I have to continue following the same tradition to uphold the good name of our forefathers and to train the future generations. So Arjuna was very afraid that this could all be destroyed. In some ways you could say the society, yeah, it was stereotyped, you could say.
Stereotyped.
In the modern age they talk about the, you know, have more opportunity to go up in the world. But Vedic society did not value social mobility, in fact they were very much against it. It was considered disgraceful for someone, for instance, born in a Brahmin family to degrade himself by his activities down to the level of a Shudra. It was also considered improper for one born in a Shudra family to try to make himself into a Brahmin. Of course, it wasn't allowed, but for one to want to do that out of a sense of ambition was considered very wrong. The essence of Brahmanahood is Brahmajanatiti Brahmana, to understand spiritual truth. So one who's actually interested in spiritual truth, even if they come from a very fallen background, they are to be accepted as a Brahmana in the true sense of the term. A famous example is there of the Javali Satyakama, who was the son of, who was more or less a prostitute, made servant. But just for the sake of prestige, to accept some other duty was considered very wrong. Just like, Vishvamitra eventually was accepted as a Brahmana, but not very easily. We find in Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna says twice, Shrayan Swadharma Vigana Paradharma Swamishrupa. It's very fearful, very risky. Very risky to try to take up someone else's swadharma. Because if one is trained from an early age to perform a particular duty and there's a whole consciousness and culture that goes with that, it's very difficult to change to another completely different culture. Now I may say, well, this idea is very limiting. But the whole point is that the society was set up for the sake of spiritual realization. So from a young age, people were trained to perform a particular social duty. Everyone had a fixed profession. So there's no job insecurity. And then this idea, you know, what am I going to do in my life? And you take some university degree and you hope you can get some job. There's no such thing. Life was much less complex. But the whole idea was that without making it such a big endeavor just to earn some livelihood, people can do that in a very simple and natural way. And the whole society is centered on spiritual advancement. So that everyone in every status of life can make spiritual advancement. Brahmana can directly, those who are engaged as archers, they directly touch the body of the Lord, the deity. And the potter makes pots for performing the abhishekam of the deity, and that is not considered any less service. And everyone can participate in glorifying the Lord. Everyone can chant the holy name of the Lord, that's open to everyone. So everyone has an equal opportunity for spiritual realization. Arjuna was afraid that this whole tradition would just stop if the leading members of the family were killed. And we can see that in the modern age that's actually happened. Although physically the elder members of the caste haven't been killed, but the culture has been killed anyway. The culture has been killed by psychological warfare and commercial aggression. And it's very difficult to put it back together again. When we try to inculcate that even within our members of ISKCON, the proper societal usages and understandings they often think this is stupid or crazy. For instance, Srila Prabhupada is very much against modern education. But in ISKCON today we find that when most of our devotees are promoting it, oh, it's very good. Because it's easier to go with the flow than to go against it. So it may be easy to go with the flow, but the flow is not going to any good place. It's just going down the sewer. So the endeavor to set up Varnashram communities in which devotees can live according to the Varnashram system is essential to Srila Prabhupada's mission. What happens if we incorporate the values of the demoniac society is that eventually in the name of Krishna Bhakti we all become demons. But we should understand very clearly that this modern society is demoniac. It's set up on the basis of exploitation, sense gratification, not on the basis of surrender to Krishna. We should understand that this modern civilization is a soul-killing civilization. When we speak like this, sometimes devotees call this fanatical. Ugravadi. Actually, Ugravada, it simply means one who has an extreme and nasty outlook. It doesn't actually mean someone who kills others or blows them up. It refers to a vada, not to activity. Ugravadi in Hindi means a terrorist.
Yeah. Here also, if I translate fanatic, I mean because there is, that's what I suppose.
Yeah, but actually a terrorist, Ugravada means someone, it refers to an attitude or a philosophy or an outlook on life. So it doesn't actually mean someone who blows someone up.
Yeah.
That would be an Ugrapanti, I guess you could say. That's another term. Ugrapanti is someone who actually goes and blows others up. But Ugravadi simply means one who has... That's why you'll find in many terrorist organizations they have their political wing. They just engage in discussion and they try to work within the system, and then they have then secretly linked up with the people who are going to blow others up. Just like the Irish Republican Army has its political wing, the Sinn Féin, who they go and they sit for parliament and they get voted in and this and that. So there's Ugravadi and Ugrapanti. So actually fanatic, I guess you could... Tibravadi, maybe you could say like that. Actually, we're all supposed to be Tibravadi. Tibrena. What is that? Tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. We're all supposed to be Tibravadi. Anyway, if you're not totally brainwashed and befuddled by the modern way of thinking, there may be some few people who are like that. I request you to consider, is what Srila Prabhupada says a fact or not? Is the modern society demoniac or not? We're supposed to hear from sadhus words that will cut our material attachment. Santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam puktimihi. The definition of a sadhu is one who speaks in such a way to cut the material attachment. But we like to cheat ourselves and we only accept as a sadhu someone who nourishes our material attachment. And if someone speaks in such a way that's supposed to cut our material attachment, we put heavily bolted doors on our heart, seven layers, so that no such words can enter within. So there's a saying in Sanskrit, Aranya Rodanam. which is that comes in English also, crying in the wilderness. It literally means, Aranya means?
Forest.
Forest. And Rodanam? Crying. So, crying in the forest. Who will, in the thick forest, who will hear? So I think that, that in English we have this, it's probably from the Bible. It's crying in the wilderness, is the saying. Wilderness, you know what that means?
Yeah, God, the forest.
Not exactly forest. Well, if it means, some barren land, or where there's no, it means where no one is living, and it's just all overgrown like that. Alright, is there any question or comment, please? How many times did I mention Krishna in that lecture? But how much background understanding do we have to understand what Krishna is saying? The whole context, we have to understand the whole context within which Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Arjuna's arguments appear to be very good. Almost anyone else would have agreed with him. If Arjuna had spoken all this to Yudhishthira, maybe Yudhishthira would have agreed and called off the fight. Bhima might have killed Arjuna. Krishna told Arjuna, you're just a fool. Now if someone says something foolish, it should be obvious that it's foolish, isn't it? Just like if people say that there was nothing, and then there was an explosion, and then there was everything. Sounds pretty foolish, doesn't it? Of course, if you present the same theory with lots of scientific equations and long words, then it might sound very intelligent. That is called speciousness, which means that actually it's foolish, but it sounds like it's intelligent. So Arjuna offered specious arguments, which are about to be dismantled by Krishna. Alright, any questions, comments, or protests?
You mentioned different layers.
Say it in...
You mentioned different layers obstructing the words, and similarly even when we chant Hare Krishna, it's not going inside the heart.
So, open the doors. We have to open the doors of our material attachments and reservations, our objections. Well, if I surrender to Krishna, then I won't be able to enjoy it. I won't be able to enjoy myself. We have so many reservations. People will speak badly about me. Anything else?
Management mentioned that in the next cycle, change was considered very. Like there was a quite resistance to change.
In Vedic society, what?
Like change was quite resisted.
Change was resisted, yeah.
So, at the same time, we see that the system of Vedic society has to be applied according to time, place, and circumstances.
The system in Vedic society has to be applied according to time, place, and circumstances. Well, that's the point, that the culture maintained the circumstances over time. It maintained an ideal culture over time. That is now broken down to a large extent. That was the whole point. It shouldn't change because it's already good. We don't need to change it. Now we have to restore it as far as possible and make a circumstance favorable for people to chant Hare Krishna and to go on chanting Hare Krishna. And that their children will all, and their grandchildren will go on chanting Hare Krishna. Now I think I have to move on fairly soon.
Alright. So in the continuation of this question, like Prabhupada was certainly very against the modern education. At the same time, he has translated his books in English language.
Yeah.
So now, like how much is it that this modern education should be not be taken at all?
How much should modern education not be taken at all? Well, Srila Prabhupada wanted to set up schools, or he did in fact set up a school in which the curriculum was in English, and the curriculum was his books. So English has its redeeming quality that Srila Prabhupada wrote his books in English. Otherwise, what's the use of learning all this complex stuff to maintain a society which is overly complex and focused on sense gratification?
Well, certainly there is no need to study modern education for the first sense gratification. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada also encouraged B.I. scientists.
B.I., yeah, well, Srila Prabhupada encouraged B.I. means those who already had such a degree, they could use that knowledge to preach to people who were still bewildered by that knowledge. But he didn't say that devotees should study science so they could become members of the B.I. Those who already had that background could go back to those people and preach to them. Not that Prabhupada said, he didn't say that the children of our devotees should study science so that they can preach in B.I. He didn't say that.
And you also see that...
Wait a minute. Did you understand that point? Or you just want to keep on making... You just want to keep on flying the flag of modern education.
What I was saying was that...
Do you understand that point? That Prabhupada said that those who already have... or they've already been through that contamination, then they can use it, and they can use that background to... preach Krishna consciousness through that medium. Not that he encouraged that others who take to Krishna consciousness should also go down the same path. The study of modern science is not in and of itself good or bad, but it's if we see Krishna in that, well, it's also okay, but it's not specifically designed for that purpose. And we find that in the Shastra, which is meant for understanding Krishna, there is also a scientific understanding, but quite different to that of the modern world. And my question is that after reading Prabhupada's books, why do you all remain so attached to this horrible educational system and horrible society that's just meant for dragging us to hell? Why can't you understand that there's nothing of any intrinsic value in that? Why are you still so attached to becoming MSc, PhD, engineer, and all this kind of thing?
I was not asking this question that to take the side of knowledge.
That's what they all say. They always say, I'm always asking for someone else, but they go on asking. They go on studying and becoming MSc, PhD, and I got this degree, that degree, and I see that often our devotees, they seem to be more materialistic than even the average karma. They're so much attached to getting their degree and this and that. Getting a degree, okay, get it, but what's the big thing? I mean, there are millions of people in the world with degrees. What's the big thing? The great majority of them are going to hell. They have no idea of Krishna.
Well, the problem is that if I want to preach Krishna consciousness...
If I want to preach Krishna consciousness, I have to have a university degree. Bogus. Not true at all. I don't have a university degree.
General acceptability in the academia is not...
The general accept... You will be well accepted if you're a sadhu. If you're not a sadhu... If you happen to have that degree, okay. But then why spend 5-6 years just to get it, just because people might accept you a little better?
So
if you have it. I have a disciple in Gujarat. He was cooking in a mess in a college town. Now he set up the whole Bhagavad Darshan in Gujarati. He's set up preaching programs all over Gujarat, preaching to all educated people, as they're called. It's if you happen to have it, okay, but then why give it so much importance? And it can be used for preaching, but then why among devotees? We say,
oh, he's a PhD.
Why?
Why among devotees, where we're supposed to be seeing each other's devotional qualities, do we put so much emphasis on, oh, this one's a Kaupati, and this one's from a Brahmin family, and this one has a PhD? Why? What's that got to do with bhakti? Why do we put so much emphasis? It's materialistic.
My question was that now we see that
these things, okay, they can be used for preaching, too, but it's not the essence of preaching. And if we emphasize it too much, then we ourselves become materialistic.
We have to preach Krishna consciousness properly so that people can become devotees who are in the world. If some few of the devotees do PhD,
if you have it already, all well and good. If you don't have it, then a PhD is not required to preach.
Some people are like inclined to...
Already there are so many PhD devotees. Better, if you want PhDs for preaching, go and preach, make some PhDs devotees. That's what Prabhupada... Prabhupada himself didn't have a university degree. He threw it away. He didn't accept it. So... easier than going through all this long process. And anyway, to get a PhD, you have to study all nonsense, talk all nonsense. You have to write in there, you have to write, even if you want to study Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you have to write like this. Well, according to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Vishvambara Mishra was accepted as the incarnation of the Hindu god Vishnu. You can't write that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayana. If you write like that, you immediately fail. Unless you become a demon, you can't get a PhD. There is a possibility, actually. They have the Vaishnava College, isn't it? Well, it's Vaishnava Studies at Madras University, which concentrates on Sri Vaishnava and Madhva philosophy. So you could get a PhD there and introduce Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but you better get your PhD. As Prabhupada writes, one should take a PhD from Ramananda Rai. Have you read that? Those teachings of Ramananda Rai to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is the highest theistic understanding. So Prabhupada writes, one should take a PhD from Ramananda Rai. So become very fixed in Prabhupada's teachings. And then maybe you could go from PhD to the Vaishnava College, or whatever it's called, Madras University, Vaishnava Divine. And then maybe you could use it for preaching. If our aim is to preach, then Krishna will give us the intelligence what to do. And that might include getting a PhD. Might be. But if we promote like this, you have to get a PhD for preaching, which is not at all true. It's not required for preaching. Then you'll find that people with all materialistic desires, oh, I want a PhD. Then in the name of bhakti, they'll get their PhD. Whereas actually they're just nourishing their material desire for prestige. That's what's happened. If you're actually doing it for preaching, then it's completely pure. But if you're saying preaching, 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 but the real thing is you want to see yourself glorified, then that's materialistic. Yeah.
It's carried
forward to the next life, but everyone is born a Shudra. How do we understand? Well, it's also stated in Bhagavad Gita that one is born in a certain family, then Tatrutam Guruji Samsa Ramla Ante Pavarpate Iham. It's not that immediately when you're born, that you remember from the previous life, but at a certain point it becomes manifest. That's a general statement. For those of you who are devotees, they're never shudras. It's a material designation. I think I should finish because I have to move on. Alright, we're in that question.
Yesterday we were discussing with the company that the appointment, this role Lakshmi must be there for even to perform bhakti, otherwise, you know, anxiety.
Lakshmi is required for bhakti, otherwise, you'll be an anxiety.
So,
a haituki, a prati, a
Bhakti does not depend on any material condition. If you want to preach Krishna consciousness, then if money is there, that can be usefully used. But if we think that money has to come, or if I don't have money, then I'll be disturbed in my mind. Well, that's a neophyte dogma. If one is not on a spiritual platform, then one thinks, I need money, I need a wife, I need a car, I need this, I need that, I need everything else, then I'll do it. But then you may take millions of lifetimes, because we have our mature desires are never fulfilled. If we think we have to have material facility, then I will do it. That's Maya's trick that we'll never do it. So start wherever we are. Just see how the mind offers so many different. Actually, I'm very sincere. I only want to do bhakti. But I really need to have a little money, and a house, and a wife, and a few children. So I'm only doing it for bhakti, but like this, again, it's called Ahamavanchana, cheating ourselves. Please take the book off the floor.